Hello and welcome to the Fantasy Sanctuary. Welcome in. It is week 11 and we are here to walk you through every single game on this week's slate. We will cover start sits, your trade questions, any dynasty nuggets, and of course Tommy's going to be dropping DFS goodness throughout the show. And with all of that said, let's dive straight into it. Tennessee at Jacksonville. Look, I have been such a big believer of Trevor Lawrence since he came in, and it feels like this last week the whole world has turned on him. Is now the opportunity for Trevor Lawrence to really, like he did last year, kick into gear and finish the season strong and show the true superstar that he is?
It would definitely be kind of overdue in some ways because, you know, this was a guy who this offseason people viewed as somebody who could take the leap up to like the Justin Herbert level of quarterback tiers. And he was being drafted not that far behind that. And that whole tier of quarterback has really been a disaster, whether you're talking about Anthony Richardson, Kirk Cousins, Deshaun Watson, and then Trevor Lawrence, who has remained healthy, but performances just, they've not been there. You know, he's the QB25 in points per game. And what we talked about in the offseason when we had Josh Norris on the channel as well, talked about the fact that Calvin Ridley could be able to help them open up the downfield passing game. And it just hasn't happened for one reason or another. This game, though, is definitely the kind of spot which can be a get right spot, really. You know, the Titans struggle against the pass. They've, you know, given up plenty of big passing games to players, but they still haven't allowed a top seven quarterback finish. They've only allowed 200-300-yard passing games. And it doesn't feel like this could be as explosive as we might want. I feel confident in Christian Kirk. I think, you know, if you can take your dart throws at Calvin Ridley, because the Titans are so poor against wide receivers, they rank 31st versus wide receiver ones in DVOA, 25th versus wide receiver twos. And I'd be fine taking shots on them. I think it's probably going to be a bit of a tricky matchup for Travis Etienne. You know, he's had four top five finishes in the last five games, you can see on screen. But Tennessee have allowed the third fewest running back receptions at only 2.9 per game. So it doesn't feel like it's going to be a massive day for him. I think on the other side of things, you know, this is such a condensed offense. We've got Derrick Henry, who's the RB17 in points per game. We've got DeAndre Hopkins, who's the wide receiver 31. When Will Levis jumped onto the scene and he had that 26-point debut, it felt like this could be the gunslinger that was going to be fantastic for fantasy purposes all season long. And then he's had back-to-back single-digit games since then. So it's been a little bit disappointing. But I think, yeah, this is a kind of game where I'd be open to playing small correlations within it, where you'd go in, okay, I'll play Christian Kirk and DeAndre Hopkins. Or going, okay, perhaps I'll play Calvin Ridley with DeAndre Hopkins, try and get a bit more different. But yeah, it's not as fruitful as I'd like it to be. The Jags do allow the 12th most fantasy points to wide receivers. Where they're really vulnerable is on the outside ones, which is why I keep bringing up DeAndre Hopkins. He started the season playing in the slot a little bit more, and since then the Titans seem to have realized that to get the best out of him, they should put him on the boundary. And this game against the Jags, who lead the league in points given up to wide receivers on the boundary, perhaps it's a game where he can go off, but I'm just not sure I'm confident enough in it to really go all in and stack this game heavily in DFS.
Yeah, it's interesting you talk about DeAndre Hopkins and his use as a boundary receiver. That's been my biggest issue with Calvin Ridley over the past kind of 2 months, 3 months, really, is that I did a bit of a deep dive this week when I watched as much of the tape as I could possibly. And he's getting open. He's winning. But the problem is that they're not using him in easy, simple ways. They are basically saying, you're an outside receiver, go and win deep, go and win outside, and that's it. There's no usage out of the slot. There's very little crossing routes. There's very little, you know, dig, shallow crosses, anything like that. And it just feels like they're almost making life hard for Trevor Lawrence and saying, you're a superstar, go and win us games. We don't need to make it easy for you. And I just can't get my head around it. This is a, you know, Doug Peterson, when he was in Philadelphia, when we saw Carson Wentz in the MVP conversation, when we saw Nick Foles win a Super Bowl, it was all about the RPOs, Let's make life easy for the quarterback. Let's have those easy completions to inside receivers. And I just can't get my head around why Jacksonville aren't doing it. And I know there's some potential rumors that Doug Peterson's going to take over a little bit more of the play calling, maybe after giving it up in the offseason. To me, if that happens, this Jacksonville offense could take a big step because it feels like it's there, like it's close. I know that I feel like I've been saying this for about 2 months, but it's there. You can almost see it. They just need that little bit more oomph, I feel.
Yeah, I agree with all that. And I think, you know, the Titans are a team that you shouldn't never take lightly. Like, you know, Mike Vrabel's record against the spread is really strong. His team, you know, he gets the best out of players who possibly don't deserve to be starting games at times. And, you know, this is one of those AFC South grudge matches. Things can get messy in them. And I think that if the Jags aren't able to beat the Titans, that they're going to suddenly start looking over their backs at the Texans, who are gaining ground on them rapidly.
Yeah, absolutely. We've got a few questions in the chat. If you want to get your questions answered, get them in down below. Michael Diganji, I was offered Saquon Barkley for Keaton Mitchell straight up. Thoughts?
I mean, that's a tricky one because I do expect Keaton Mitchell to get more run as we go, and I think he's going to replace Justice Hill over time. But, I mean, Saquon Barkley is the RB10. I think this week's game against the Commanders, there's some sneaky upside for him. I think it kind of comes down to your roster makeup. If you need Saquon Barkley to try and buy yourself some points this week, I'd possibly be a little more confident in him than Keaton Mitchell this week.
Yeah, I mean, this feels mental that this is even a conversation. Like, you know, Saquon Barkley's a star. But I think now we have to realise that with that offence, with Tommy DeVito under centre, Saquon Barkley's basically a back-end RB2. Yeah. And I think that whilst Keaton Mitchell isn't even, you know, in the RB2 territory at the moment, there is absolutely a scenario in a world where down the stretch in the playoffs, he could do that. So I love your chat, what you're saying about, you know, maybe if you're a top seed, if you're close to securing that playoff spot, keep Mitchell. But if you're needing wins, if you're needing points over the next couple of weeks, I think, yeah, you've got to go and get Barkley right now.
Okay, so he's got Kamara, Stevenson and Brian Robinson. I'd be keeping Keaton Mitchell in that sort of situation. I think that Keaton Mitchell gives you upside that Saquon possibly doesn't in that scenario. I don't think we're going to see Tyrod Taylor again. I think the Giants are just going to be very miserable for the rest of the year.
Yeah, no, I tend to agree with you there. Next question we've got from Thomas in the chat saying, big question this week, half PPR, it needs to sit one. Devon Achane, Joe Mixon, Aaron Jones or Brian Robinson?
I think I'd lean towards Aaron Jones there. We saw quite a bit of involvement for AJ Dillon last week, an annoying amount for AJ Dillon after I'd sort of talked up Aaron Jones last week. I think I'd be open to Joe Mixon as well. I don't think that the Bengals are running the ball particularly well right now, and I think that's something which the Ravens can work against. But yeah, be Mixon or Jones for me.
Yeah, it's Jones for me. Achane, Mixon and Robinson are all top 12 options for me this week. So Jones is a back-end RB2. So yeah, I'd definitely be sitting him. And then last question before we move on to the next matchup. Should I trade Kenneth Walker for Rashad White?
Again, that's a tricky one. I don't particularly love Rashad White's matchup this week against the Niners. I think if you can hold this trade until next week, I'd possibly be a little bit more interested in it. I think the Rams play the Seahawks and they're not exactly a run funnel team. You know, they're not giving up huge amounts of points to running backs. But if I could hold off on making this trade till next week, then I'd possibly be more open to it.
Yeah, I'm not making this trade at all. I think that they've both got similar ranges of outcomes, but Kenneth Walker's ceiling is 10 times higher. I think realistically, they're both going to score similar fantasy points. I think their floors are similar, but if Zach Charbonnet gets injured, I think Kenneth Walker goes back to being a top five back. I don't think that's ever in the range of outcomes for Rashad White. We'll move on to the next matchup though, Tom. The Chargers at Green Bay. This is two teams that feel like they're very desperate for a win this week. Is there one side that you think could come out on top?
I mean, I've been watching the NFL long enough to know that backing the Chargers to do the easy thing at times is just a very bad idea. So it definitely feels like a trap game, particularly given that this one is in Green Bay. We know we're in sort of cold weather games for the Packers now, and it's not going to be particularly great up there. The Chargers are incredibly banged up. You look at Keenan Allen returned to practice today after missing yesterday. Gerald Everett's missed games. Got Quentin Johnston, who hasn't really arrived yet, let alone missed anything. And then you've got Austin Eckler, who has had three straight games of 21-plus points. The Packers are very bad against the run. We've seen them give up, you know, plenty of points. They've allowed the seventh most fantasy points to running backs. And I just think this stacks up to be an Austin Eckler game. I think I'd be a little bit wary in DFS of attacking it with Justin Herbert and even Keenan Allen. I think that while you can get at the Packers through the air, they are reasonably good against slot receivers, and it's not something that I'm dying to do. Whereas on the other side of things, yeah, it feels like there's some sneaky upside to the Packers passing game this week because the Chargers are terrible on defense pretty much all over. They rank 28th versus wide receiver ones. They've allowed the fourth most fantasy points to running backs. They've allowed the second most fantasy points to quarterbacks. They've allowed the third most receiving yardage to wide receivers. So I'd be okay looking at small Jordan Love stacks with like one of maybe Romeo Dubs or even Jaden Reed. Christian Watson is the ultimate dart throw this week. He is 4,600 on DraftKings. And while we know that he's been basically a complete bust this season, I think we know that he also has slate-breaking potential. So if you're in a situation where you really need to find a ceiling play in redraft or anywhere like that this week, and you can put Christian Watson in, the amount of points he might be able to deliver you against this bad Chargers pass defense is potentially worth that risk.
Yeah, I think that Jordan Love has had a wild season. He had those first three games where, from a fantasy perspective, he was massively overproducing his expected points. It then came back to earth with a crash, and everybody's ready to say that the Packers need to bench him and move on and everything like that. I actually thought last week was one of his better games. I thought he played well. I thought his deep ball looked competent, where it's looked pretty poor all year, really. And I think that he took a step. Now, whether he can build off that again this week, I think, is an interesting question. You mentioned Christian Watson. Look, I'm not the biggest Christian Watson fan. I didn't like him as a prospect. I didn't like him after the hype got out of control this offseason. I think he's a fast, deep threat who can't win contested catches, which isn't really a particularly great skill set. That being said, I've been playing around with the PFF expected points model, and he is the number one wide receiver in terms of the differential to a negative point at expected points. So he's expected 12.6 points per game at the moment so far this year. He's producing 7.2. So yes, he's underproducing. Yes, he's not very good. But just based on the volume he's seen, it feels like there could be some regression coming. And maybe, as you said, maybe he is that dart throw that you can go and throw there.
Yeah, and I put this stat out on Twitter, which I'll just go back to. The Chargers, they allow the second most fantasy points to quarterbacks, and they've had some real layup matches in those games. Like, the only quarterbacks that they've kept below 21 points this season are Aiden O'Connell, Tyson Bagent, and Zach Wilson. Every other quarterback has scored over 21 points. So really, this is a show-me game for Jordan Love. Is Jordan Love in that category of Aiden O'Connell, Tyson Bagent, and Zach Wilson? Or does he belong with the rest of the quarterbacks the Chargers have played who've walloped them?
Yeah, absolutely. And Mohammed's in the chat asking a question. He says, should I trade DeAndre Swift and TJ Hockenson for Eckler and Trey McBride or Olave? So if you can get, I'm slightly confused. If you can get Eckler and Olave for Swift and Hockenson, that's an absolute smash. I don't know if he means Olave on his own for Swift and Hockenson, or
yeah, I'd take Eckler and Olave. I'm not sure I'd do Eckler and McBride because sure the difference between DeAndre Swift and Eckler is that massive, and TJ Hockenson is just on a tear. I know Trey McBride's been excellent, but at some point you'd imagine Marquise Brown eventually gets going and eats into that slightly.
Yeah, absolutely. I agree with you there. If you want to be like Mohammed, get your questions answered. All you got to do is drop them in that comment box below. If you're not watching live, you can still leave your questions. Tom and I will answer 100% of the questions we get, 100% of the comments we get after the show. Now, the next matchup feels like this could be an absolute barnstormer. We've got Arizona against Houston. Obviously, Arizona have got the Houston pick next year. Could that be in their minds when they're going for the win here? Is it just a case of start as many options as you can in this matchup with the 48 over under?
Yeah, I think so. And I think you look at kind of the Texans defense, they're getting stronger against the pass. They had Derek Stingley come back last week, but they've lost their linebacker Perryman to a 2-game suspension. And so perhaps they'll be softer against a run. James Conner, we know that when he's out there, he sees really good volume. And we still, they claim Michael Carter. But I haven't seen enough from this team to be worried about his usage yet. Marquise Brown, I think a lot of people were disappointed in how poor of a week he had with Kyler coming back. But it just seemed like one of those games where, you know, the Falcons, we've talked about it all season on this show. They're good at taking out the top options at wide receiver. And this week against the Texans, I'd expect Hollywood to be able to get going a bit easier. You know, the Texans are ranked 24th versus wide receiver ones, so it's not the toughest matchup. The Texans are also 25th versus tight ends, so you can get at them. They've allowed the most fantasy points to tight ends. They allow 7.1 receptions per game. So I don't mind starting Trey McBride as well. With Kyler, it was incredibly sort of positive to see how much he was able to rush the ball and what he looked like when he was rushing the ball. You know, he went 6 for 33, but it was one of those kind of situations with Kyler where if you actually measured it as the crow flies, he must have rushed for 80 yards or so because he was scampering all over the place. So I'm very much interested in that. I think you can start Devin Singletary if Damian Pierce misses out again and he's not been practicing. Been better last week than he was the previous week. Aside from that, on the Texan side, CJ Stroud is leading the league with 291 passing yards per game, and he's just looked fantastic. We can definitely lean into that. Tank Dell, Nico Collins, they both have excellent matchups. Dalton Schultz, I'd possibly hesitate slightly about because the Cardinals are allowing the 6th fewest fantasy points to tight ends. But in redraft, I wouldn't be dropping him or going out to find someone else just for the sake of it because he's had such a strong target share over the last few weeks. It's probably okay, but in DFS, I'd just be looking at 5K to be playing it from the McBride angle instead.
Yeah, it feels like you can start McBride over Schultz, have similar upside, similar potential, and save $600. Like don't see a world where I'd be going Schultz over McBride. McBride, since Zach Ertz went to IR, is the Titan 2 in points. He's the Titan 3 in points per game. Like, the guy's being used to an obscene level and he's just producing. You know, we were both very high on McBride in the offseason, walked it back slightly after he couldn't beat Zach Ertz off the field to start the season. But we know the guy's talented. We know the guy was a great prospect coming out, and he's just balling. Very excited. On the Michael Carter signing, I'm not massively concerned for James Conner. Like, Michael Carter is a good receiving back. The problem is that he can't pass protect. So I don't see a world that Arizona, who's got, you know, their franchise quarterback coming off an ACL injury, is going to have Michael Carter on the field over James Conner. I think Carter is basically going to be used very sparingly. So if this is an opportunity to maybe go and buy low on James Conner, I'd definitely be interested in going and doing that now, because I think he's going to be a workhorse down the stretch.
Yeah, I mean, what we've seen with the Michael Carter waiver claim, that's what teams like the Cardinals have to do. You know, you've got good waiver priority, so you might as well use it. You might as well take a look at these players now, because they're going to have a big roster churn before they get going next year in year two of this rebuild sort of on the fly for the Cardinals. So it was a sensible move, but I don't think I've ever seen anything from Michael Carter to suggest he's a better player right now than James Conner is.
No, I mean, you look at the way the Jets have used him, he basically didn't carry the ball. He was purely a situational receiving back, and yeah, I'm not concerned at all. The next matchup, Chicago at Detroit, an NFC North battle. Justin Fields is back. Do you think that brings back to life the likes of DJ Moore and potentially Cole Kmet?
I think that the Detroit Lions defense is very good and shouldn't be underestimated. They rank number 11 against wide receiver ones. They rank sixth best against tight ends. They've been very solid throughout the season. And I think even if Justin Fields is back, I'm not sure that I believe in the Bears massively in this game. I think, you know, we might get Khalil Herbert back out there, which would be good. Detroit have allowed the fifth fewest fantasy points to running backs. They've allowed the seventh fewest receptions to running backs. They've allowed the 11th most wide receiver fantasy points. So even though I'm saying like they're good against wide receivers, it's probably easier for them to be got at through the air than it is on the ground. But I look at the Lions pass rush, and Aiden Hutchinson is truly elite. And I think that he could give the Bears offensive line real problems this week. So I'm not massively interested in attacking it heavily from that side. But on the other side of the ball, I think that there's loads of opportunities here. I think you can look at Amon-Ra St. Brown at, sorry, 8,800. And I think you can look at Jahmyr Gibbs, 7K. I think you can play both of them. I would be stacking both of them with Jared Goff. I would be happy to play Sam Laporta. Chicago have allowed fourth most fantasy points to tight ends. I would be more than happy to just lean into that. I'm probably cooling slightly on David Montgomery this week because the Bears have been fantastic against the run. They've, you know, really clamped down on that. I think only three running backs have rushed for more than 60 yards against, sorry, that's the Detroit side of it. I did have a stat for Chicago. I can't see it fire right now. But yeah, instead I would rather lean into Jahmyr Gibbs because the Bears are rubbish at stopping running backs receiving the ball. Here we go. Yeah, so the Bears rushing defense, they've not allowed a running back to total more than 44 rushing yards since week four. They've only allowed two players over 65 rushing yards all season. Meanwhile, through the air to running backs, they've allowed league high 61 receiving yards per game, 10.3 yards per reception, which is the second most. And they also average a league high 0.5 running back touchdowns per game in the receiving game. So I think there's definitely ways to attack it, but I'm just not sure I can get there on the Bears side of things at the minute.
Yeah, it feels like it's not a game that I want to be attacking too heavily from both sides. I think it's perhaps a Lion stack with maybe a small bring back, but I don't think it's going to be a game that I'm going to be attacking hugely. Amon-Ra St. Brown absolutely killing it at the moment. I talked about it in our Dynasty Rises and Fallers video on Monday. For me, now a top five Dynasty wide receiver, easily in that kind of elite tier. And I just think you've got to be so excited about what he's doing week in, week out. It's the consistency that's absolutely blowing me away at the moment. The next matchup we're going to talk about, perhaps not the glamour tie for fantasy, Pittsburgh at Cleveland. We've got Dorian Thompson-Robinson under center. We know that he struggled when he played earlier in the season. Do you think there's any upsides we can hope for the likes of Amari Cooper and Njoku, or do you think this is just going to be one to avoid?
I think, well, for a start, we've got the over-under as 36.0, and just looking now, it's fallen since the lines opened down to 32.5. I believe it's the lowest projected game total in about 3 years, and it's just really hard to have much faith in any of this, you know. As you mentioned, DTI completed 52% of passes for 121 yards and three interceptions in his last start against the Ravens. Now, the Steelers' defense isn't quite as good as the Ravens, but they're still a sort of top 10 unit. We've got, you know, the Steelers allow the fourth most rushing yards per game at 111, 4.5 yards per carry. I think that's where the Browns have to be looking to attack this game. What we've seen out of Jerome Ford's been really positive. He's been getting more touches over the last few weeks. And I think that the Browns will lean heavily into that. I don't feel like it's too much of a downgrade for David Njoku. We've talked about how Deshaun Watson and him, it took them a while to get on the same page, but they did seem to be clicking. But over the last couple of years, he's been just as productive without Deshaun Watson as he has been with him. And then from the Pittsburgh side, I mean, it's really difficult. Deontay Johnson had a nightmare week last week. The Browns allow third fewest fantasy points to wide receivers. They're both teams are good against wide receivers on the boundary. They're more susceptible to sort of plays over middle. Cleveland, they've allowed sixth fewest fantasy points to running backs, even, you know, on the back of Jaylen Warren and Najee Harris looking good last week. It's tricky to know whether you can play them. And Cleveland have allowed the third fewest fantasy points to quarterbacks. So I really struggle with this one. I feel like sometimes we don't need to get too cute. And if you don't need to play players from this, then I wouldn't bother. I'm sitting Deontay Johnson from a number of lineups this week because I just don't feel confident in Kenny Pickett to really push this game.
Yeah, it's one that I don't love. You know that I'm going to be starting Deontay Johnson. But whilst we're here, we've had a question in the chat, and I thought, what better opportunity than to share my trade calculator from my survival kit? If you're a member, you get access to this for free. So the question is, a 24 first, a 25 second, Christian Watson for T. Higgins. For me, I think it's too much to pay for T. Higgins. As you can see on there, even projecting that 24 first as late, I'd still lean to the picks and Watson side. Tom, do you have any thoughts on that?
Yeah, definitely. Unless this is an offer that you're getting, if someone's offering you this to give up Higgins, I'd absolutely smash that. I mean, this feels like quarterback value kind of trade. But yeah, I wouldn't pay that for T. Higgins. I think it's been such a difficult time for fantasy managers to roster Higgins that I'd be looking to buy low rather than anything like that. But yeah, appreciate you here for the memes.
Yeah, absolutely. I love T. Higgins as a buy low. I think he's going to be an absolute star if he lands in a different situation. But I just think, yeah, that's too much to pay for T. Higgins right now. So I definitely lean the picks on the Watson side. So diving back into the next matchup, we've got Las Vegas at Miami. Devon Achane's back. We talked about the PFF fantasy model in terms of expected points. So far this season, he has produced 14.3 points per game more than expected based on his usage. Is he just an absolute cheat code, or is he due for huge amounts of regression?
Well, I think both things can probably be true. You know, despite not playing since week five, and he only had two touches in the opening two games, Achane's still the RB27 in total points. He's got more fantasy points than Najee Harris, Antonio Gibson. His seven total touchdowns is still the sixth most among running backs. And now he's playing a Raiders defense that's poor against the run. You know, Vegas allows the eighth most fantasy points to running backs, the third most rushing yards. They rank 26th versus running backs in the passing game in DVOA metrics. And I think this is coming at the right time because you can see on screen there at the bottom left, Raheem Mostert between weeks 1 to 6, he averaged 71.5 rushing yards, but over the last three, it's dipped to 58.6. We know Mostert is, what, 31 years old, so it shouldn't be surprising that, you know, we're seeing a little bit of a dip off in production from him. But this game is absolutely perfect for Achane because the Raiders have been sneaky good as a defense this year. They ranked 18th in DVOA, which I think if you surveyed people blindly, they'd probably put them around 25th or so. They've been good against sort of, well, they ranked 17th first wide receiver one, 7th against wide receiver twos, 27th against tight ends, where they're quite susceptible, and then 26th against running backs, as I mentioned already. So where they really give up points is to the running backs and on the ground. So I feel like I can't get away from Achane this week. He's only 6,600. I feel like for me, he'll be one of those kind of players that I'm fine playing in cash games, even though I know that regression is coming. On the other side of things, on the Raiders, I think you can play Josh Jacobs. You know, Miami allowed 20th most points to running back, so it's not an incredible matchup that way. But we saw that the Raiders, their game plan is to really feed Josh Jacobs, to really try and force targets to Davante Adams. And out of the two, I'd be more confident in Josh Jacobs being able to sustain fantasy points than Devante Adams if he's got some combination of Jalen Ramsey and Xavier Howard following him. But generally speaking, 46.5 just feels a little bit high for me.
Yeah, I think I love the Josh Jacobs play. I think that, you know, we keep hearing Antonio Pierce talking about building the team around Josh Jacobs, which feels slightly mental. But for the next few weeks, I think Josh Jacobs has got the potential to be a complete league winner for fantasy down the stretch. I think he's going to get the rock. And we know that if he's going to see 20 to 25 touches in some games, he's going to produce. And at that price in DFS, I think he's great. If you're in redraft and you're looking towards the playoffs, I think he's a potential go and buy now before he has another couple of big weeks and suddenly becomes a lot more expensive. The one question, I guess, is Jalen Waddle. Now we see Achan back. It feels like it's either Tyreek and the running game or Tyreek and Waddle. It's never all three. Do you think that with the running game potentially now back to being multiple heads, do you think Waddle is someone that we should be nervous about starting on a weekly basis?
So Mike McDaniel talked going into the bye after the game in Germany about how much he wanted to use this bye week to figure out where they were going wrong with Jalen Waddle and try and jumpstart him and get him going. You look back across what he's done this season, he's only got 3 touchdowns. He's only had 1 game over 100 yards. He is the wide receiver 25, I think, off the top of my head, in points per game, which is disappointing given where he was drafted. You know, he was drafted firmly in the second round. I think that there's definitely potential for them to be able to work this out where both the running game and Tyreek and Jalen Waddle can all work together, because that's all there is. We don't need to worry about Durham Smythe. You know, we don't need to worry about the wide receiver 3 on this team. You know, Robbie Anderson got cut earlier today. Chase Claypool is, you know, he's not fantasy relevant and hasn't been for a long time. So, yeah, I think there are going to be frustrating weeks, but players like Jalen Waddle, we roster them because of their ceiling outcomes, you know. And if you're looking for a safe play at this point, and if you've got somebody more reliable on your roster that you feel more comfortable and you need safety, then absolutely fine. But I know that most of the time when I put Jalen Waddle into my lineup, all I'm thinking about is his ceiling outcome and the fact that he could go for 25, 30 PPR points without batting an eyelid.
Yeah, I think for DFS as a dart throw, fine. I think in redraft, in Dynasty, he's that sort of wide receiver 2 territory. I think basically if you've got him, you kind of almost have to start him because the price you probably paid to acquire him warrants that you have to. But if you are here, if you enjoy winning fantasy titles, hit that subscribe button. We guarantee we will help you win more and, you know, help us spread the word. Let's get more people into the sanctuary and help them win fantasy titles too. The next matchup we've got is the Giants at Washington. Look, the Giants is just horrendous. Does that just mean that this matchup is just one you can't touch because basically it's going to be so one-sided?
So, for the Giants, they don't have a single wide receiver inside the top 65 wide receivers in points per game. Like, there's been nothing. You go back to last year, and Isaiah Hodgins and Richie James were flashing. They were fantastic for fantasy. They were really useful players. And Darius Slayton flashed at times. This year, I can't remember a single week where there's been a Giants receiver who I thought, wow, that was fantastic. They did really well there. The only player that I would possibly consider is Saquon Barkley, because the Commanders, they've given up 20-point games in back-to-back weeks with Ramondre Stevenson and Kenneth Walker. They also allowed Saquon Barkley to have 18.8 points in week 7. That was his second highest score of the season. So in tournaments or in redraft, I'd get playing Saquon Barkley. Outside of that, I don't think anyone from the Giants is playable. I think you can look at Brian Robinson, and if Antonio Gibson misses out this week, then he becomes a really easy click. He'll be very chalky in DFS. The Giants, they're allowing the 3rd most fantasy points to wide receivers, 6th most yardage. So you can look at starting both Jahan Dotson and you can start Terry McLaurin. I think that the one area where the Giants kind of quite decent on defense is against the tight end position. They've allowed the third fewest tight end fantasy points. So I'd maybe be looking to pivot off Logan Thomas, who is the tight end 12 in points per game. But if you can find someone else with a nicer matchup, I'd rather do that. I think at 3,700 on DraftKings, it's just not interesting in this game environment.
Yeah, it feels like this is Brian Robinson week, doesn't it? We said that he's a stud, but he's completely matchup dependent because Washington, you know, one of the most pass-heavy offenses in the league. They're very quick to get away from him when they're, you know, in those neutral or advantageous situations. But it feels like the Giants are going to struggle to put up the points. So it could just be Brian Robinson carrying the rock. And he's a top 12 back for me this week. And it feels like, as you said, I'm going to be building a lot of lineups with Brian Robinson sliding there.
Yeah, and the Giants feel have the 11th most running back fantasy points, the 7th highest yard per carry at 4.5. Like, they're not going to have the energy levels to be able to sustain and stop the run for their whole game.
Yeah, and talking about one-sided matchups, we've got another one up next, Dallas at Carolina. Any hope that this is at least competitive, or do we just think this is going to be Dallas walking all over the Panthers?
So, on the Panthers side, the thing that kind of comes back to everything for me is how much better are things going to be with Frank Reich now calling plays again? Adam Thielen was far more productive in games with Frank Reich's calling the plays throughout this season. I had the splits in front of me and seemed to misplace them.
It's 21.1 points in games with Frank Reich and 11.1 without.
Exactly. So you look at that and you go, okay, well, can Adam Thielen be productive? Because if he is, then we can start looking at ways to build bigger stacks for DraftKings anyway. But in terms of this game, what's been incredibly interesting is just how pass heavy the Cowboys have really leaned over a few weeks. They've had their three most high pass rate games in the last 2 years in terms of situational neutral pass rate in three consecutive weeks. So I think you can look at that. You can look at the way they're using CD Lamb, moving him all over the field, and I'd be completely fine playing them. I think Dak is going to regress slightly because we've had this kind of crazy streak where he's been no worse than QB3. He's thrown for 300 passing yards and at least three touchdowns in each of the last three games. But the Cowboys just don't strike me as a team that are going to completely stop and revert back to the run at the minute. If they do, it's an absolute prime matchup for Tony Pollard. You know, we can't keep saying this is the week for Tony Pollard because it's been several weeks now and it's been pretty grim. But the Panthers do allow a league-high 1.4 running back rushing touchdowns per game. Nobody allows more running back rushing touchdowns per game. We saw last week the Cowboys really wanted to get it going for Pollard, and they gave him goal line opportunities, and it just didn't work out. I think I just feel more confident going, okay, I'd start Dak Prescott, I'd start CD Lamb, and then I'd maybe peg on one of Cooks or Gallup. I'm a little lower on Jake Ferguson this week because the Panthers allow the 7th fewest tight end fantasy points. But yeah, I think I'm just happy playing the Dak doubles at the minute. And, you know, in redraft, if I need to start one of Pollard or Ferguson, I would, and I wouldn't feel too worried about it.
Yeah, I'm a little bit nervous about those kind of secondary and tertiary Dallas receivers. I think the Panthers are second in adjusted fantasy points allowed to the wide receiver position. I think CeeDee Lamb's going to eat. We've seen the last 3 weeks. He's the first player ever to go 10 catches, 150 yards in three consecutive games. I think he's going to get his, but I'm worried about Cooks, Gallup, Tolbert, Ferguson. I think they could struggle. Look, I'm ready to... I'm willing to keep rolling the dice on Tony Pollard in my lineups. I'm willing to keep rolling the dice on him in whether it be DraftKings or Fantasy Game Day, wherever we're talking. The week is coming. I think he looks explosive in the passing game and completely not explosive in the running game. And I can't get my head around why that is the case. But I think it's going to come. And I'm willing to go down on the ship of Tony Pollard. The regression is coming. I think he's going to produce rather than miss out on a guy that I think is, you know, potentially going to have a blowout week. Whilst we're here, we've got a question from Emiliano. He says, in 7-3 in a dynasty superflex, do I start Boyd over Dell? Got Gus, AJ Dillon. No, it's easily Tank Dell this week.
Yeah, Tank Dell's got a far nicer matchup, I'd say, than Boyd. Boyd, you're hoping for it to get more on volume. And, you know, I think the only way Boyd really screws you over here is if he gets into the end zone. Otherwise, I think I'd feel much more confident in Dell.
Yeah, absolutely. And by the way, that's, I think, a humble brag from you. That's an incredible wide receiver call there. CDA, Addison Wilson. I think you're going to be competing for a few years to come. If you are here, if you're enjoying Tom's talk about DFS, if you want to get more Dynasty content, hit that join button below. We've got three different tiers. You get so much access. You get access to mine and Tom's content, Dynasty Survival Kit, DFS write-ups, and so much more. Hit that join button. We promise you will not regret it. The next matchup we're going to dive across to, Tampa Bay at San Francisco. It felt like the 49ers got things going last week. Obviously, all four guys produced. Yes, the CMC touchdown streak came to an end, but do you think that there's going to be another week where we could potentially see Ayuk, Deebo, Kittle, and CMC all produce?
Yeah, I think that this is going to be one of those where, for me, I look at the passing game most. I think the Bucs, they've been pretty good against the running back position this year. They've allowed the second fewest running back fantasy points so far. And in terms of the way you get at them, they allow the fourth most fantasy points to wide receivers. Where they're particularly vulnerable is on the outside. So you go, okay, well, let's look at Ayuk. I think you could peg on Deebo or Kittle to him. Tampa Bay have been pretty good against the tight end position. They're ranked number seven against the position in DVOA. But I think what we've seen is that George Kittle only needs one play to get loose to be able to rip off like a 60-yard touchdown. So I don't mind taking shots on him. I do think that Kittle at 6,400 is very expensive this week. I think I would rather play Deebo at 6,300, but I've got a little bit of bias there going back a couple of years at least. On the Bucs side of things, Rashad White, he's the RB3 in total points since the start of week six, but San Francisco, they allow the 10th fewest fantasy points to running backs. They've been pretty good against the position all year. They've also allowed the 5th fewest QB fantasy points. What they haven't been good against this year is the passing game, much like the Bucs. They allow the 5th most points to outside receivers. So I think you can look at that and go, okay, well, can I play Brock Purdy with Brandon Ayuk and Mike Evans? And lean into it that way. Maybe add another player into there as well and really push it. But, you know, the San Francisco offense ranks number one in DVOA. The Tampa Bay defense ranks 12th in defense in DVOA. So this, I'm hoping if Baker Mayfield can keep himself together, this is just going to be a really good game and one which could be going over the 41.5 over under.
Yeah, I think the secondary of San Francisco, if you can get after them in any scenario, I think that's the area you attack. They're 25th in adjusted fantasy points allowed to wide receiver positions and even more so to outside wide receivers. So hopefully Mike Evans can get free and get enough volume to be able to be, you know, a top 15 option this week, which is certainly where I've got him ranked. Diving across to an NFC West matchup now. We've got Seattle at the Rams. It feels like the Rams have been somewhat of an afterthought. We had the, obviously, Stafford injury. We've now had the bye week. Do we finally start to see Cooper Kupp get back to paying off that top 3, top 4 price that people paid in those early best ball weeks?
I would really hope so. Speaking as a man with, like, 25% Cooper Kupp exposure. And yeah, like you say, you know, the first 2 weeks that Kupp was back out there, he was seeing ridiculous volume. He had a target share of 35%, followed by 42%. And then the 3 weeks following, he had target shares all above 25%. So 24 different targets, but only caught 8 balls across those 3 games. 3 games in a row with 6 PPR points. By far the worst streak of his career. And obviously we can chalk week 9 down to the fact that Brett Rypien, who is no longer on the roster, was playing. and it was just an ugly game. I think that it really didn't work at all for Rams that week. But Stafford, you know, he's been off the injury report. I don't think, you know, the injury report always tells the whole truth. But I think if Stafford's out there, he will take enough of those layup volume throws that Cooper Kupp can get there on volume alone. I think where the Seahawks have been particularly vulnerable has been against slot receivers. They've allowed the fifth most fantasy points to slot receivers. So I wouldn't be surprised to see a combination of Cooper Kupp and Puka Nacua cycling between the slot. And I'd be fine starting Puka Nacua as well. In terms of the Seahawks players, I'm struggling a little bit to work out how I really want to play this. The Rams have allowed the 11th fewest fantasy points to wide receivers. They've been pretty good against running backs. Where you can probably get them a little bit more is on the outside than across the middle of the field. But even then, DK Metcalf's been so disappointing this year, and it felt like last week was the perfect situation for him, and he still wasn't able to really go off, that I'm not sure I'll be pairing him with him instead. I think I'd just look at someone like Jaxon Smith-Njigba at 4,300 and go, okay, well, how much volume can I get there? If he gets a touchdown, that's going to pay off, and I can stack Stafford with Kupp, Nacua, and JSN and hope that this game kind of really goes a bit crazy.
Yeah, I mean, we talk about it, it feels like every week, but DK Metcalf still underperforming in the touchdown category, scored 2. Based on his usage, you'd expect him to have scored about 5 so far this season. It feels like there's some regression coming, but there's only so many weeks you can continue to say that and not just buy into what he is. I think I'd rather attack this matchup from the Rams side than the Seattle side. I just think that where there's 5 potential options in the Seattle offense, you kind of feel like they could cannibalize each other and sort of eat there, whereas you feel like the Rams is going to be a little bit more narrow in terms of that fantasy production. We have got a question here from Sports Spotlight. He's saying, start one, Zay Flowers, Noah Brown, or Trey McBride?
I think I'd lean towards Trey McBride there. I think Zay Flowers looked really good last weekend and sort of banged his ankle up at one point when he was sort of well on the way to 100 yards for the day. And obviously last time against the Bengals, he had that big, long reception. But I think I'd just lean towards Trey McBride. I think this is going to be a week where Lamar spreads the ball around a bit more. And Trey McBride is a really nice matchup, as we already touched on.
Yeah, well, I've literally got them ranked back-to-back in my rankings this week. So, yeah, I've got Zay Flowers one spot ahead of Trey McBride. But as I said, they are literally back-to-back, so it's a coin flip, which I appreciate. It doesn't help you a huge amount when you're trying to make that decision. We've got 2 teams that perhaps have got slight issues, shall we say. Obviously, the Jets, everyone's calling for them to fire their offensive coordinator and try and get some production on that side of the ball. The Bills have just fired their offensive coordinator. Do you think there's anything that we can expect to see out of these two this week?
This is going to be one of those games that if Josh Allen goes out there and plays incredibly well, his MVP case is going to get back on track. Obviously, last week it took quite a hit because he had so many turnovers, but so many of them aren't on Josh Allen. He just got very unlucky. But Josh Allen was horrific in week 1 against the Jets. Sorry, week 2, was it? He had single-digit points. Since then, he's had just one game outside the top 8. He's been fantastic in both real terms and in fantasy terms. But the Jets' defense, you know, they allow the 7th fewest fantasy points to quarterbacks. They allow the 12th most to running backs. So it feels like this could be a game where the Bills lean into that and try to get their running back position going again. We've seen with James Cook, you know, the fumbles last week, but he still looked explosive towards the end of the game. Latavius Murray is what Latavius Murray is. We haven't seen Leonard Fournette yet. The Jets, they allow the fewest fantasy points to wide receivers. But, you know, Stephon Diggs, when he gets going and you get that kind of consistent volume, he does seem to find a way sometimes in these tough matchups. So I don't mind that. I think for me, the one play I'm kind of curious about is what we see from Breece Hall. We saw, obviously, the Jets cut Michael Carter, and we've seen that when the Bills played the Jets, was it week 1, Breece Hall had 147 yards on 11 touches. You know, he had an 83-yard run. The Bills' defense had been poor against running backs all season. They allowed the ninth most running back fantasy points to fourth highest yards per carry at 4.5 and the sixth highest yards per reception of running backs. So do they lean into Breece Hall, or does this become, okay, well, we're going to try and get various other players, Abanikanda involved, are we going to get Dalvin Cook more touches, which would be a complete waste. But generally speaking, I'm not sure I can really focus much attention in DFS on this. And on redraft or dynasty, I'd just start the players who are the obvious starts, the ones we've got on screen.
Yeah, I think it's start your studs. I really like Breece Hall this week. I've got him as a top five back. But I think it's purely because for the Jets to produce any sort of fantasy relevance, any sort of points in the game, they've got to ride Breece Hall. Garrett Wilson's struggling with this elbow injury. And I think that, you know, that Bills defense is pretty decimated with injuries. So I do think Breece Hall could have a big one. The one point I wanted to touch on, Tom, we've talked about Josh Allen and there's all these talks about his turnovers and all that side of things. The thing that I've not heard many people talk about is the lack of rushing. You know, Josh Allen was, you could rely on him week in, week out. He was, every year of his career, he's been over 6.5 rush attempts per game. This year, he's below 5. And I think that the Bills offense have gone, we're going to try and look after Josh Allen a little bit and not have to rely on Josh Allen being Superman and doing stupid things to try and win us the game. And that's been to the detriment of their offense. So I do wonder, now we've got a new offensive coordinator, are we going to see them say, right, Josh Allen, we're going to start, you know, more designed runs, more scrambles, and try and utilize those legs that we know are fantastic for fantasy?
I think we've already kind of seen a little bit of it coming back. Mark Duncan-Brink have established a run, put out a tweet earlier this week that between weeks 1 to 6, Josh Allen averaged 1.3 designed attempts per game. Since week 7, he's averaged 3 per game. So perhaps we are getting slightly more on track. And yeah, with Ken Dorsey gone, perhaps we see even more of it now. And it would definitely be fantastic for his fantasy production.
Yeah, absolutely. We've got a couple of questions in the chat here, Tom. We've got Rory, one of our members. If you want to be a member like Rory, hit that join button. He's saying, start Noah Brown or Irwin. Obviously, a little bit nervous because Noah Brown has missed two straight practices. Sorry.
This has got to be a deep league, Rory. Noah Brown or Irwin. I think I'd play the long game and wait until Sunday. I'd rather wait and get more information on Noah Brown, see if I can find someone else to play instead.
I think that's it. The question is, who else have you got that you could potentially go for? Is there a third option that if Noah Brown is out, you can pivot to? I'd rather Noah Brown over Trent Irwin, but that risk would maybe, if there isn't a third option and it's, you know, a deep dynasty league and you're going to pick someone off of waivers, maybe you do just need to roll Trent Irwin this week. And then the next question, we've got to pick two, Kirk, Addison, Boyd.
Kirk's an easy one for me. And I think, let me just kind of quickly, yeah, I think I'd possibly lean Addison there.
Yeah, I agree. I've got Kirk and Addison in my top 24. Boyd's wide receiver 36 for me this week. So, yeah, it's definitely Kirk and Addison for me. Perfect. We're going to dive. Oh, Rory's just come back in. He's saying he's got Tyjae Spears or AJ Dillon on the same roster. Yeah, I'd risk waiting for Noah Brown, and you can plug one of those in if needs be.
Yeah, I'd be fine starting one of those over Noah Brown if needs be.
Yeah, perfect. If you want to be like Rory and get your questions answered, remember, even if you're not watching live, you can still get 100% of your questions answered. Just drop them in that comment box below. Tom and I will give you our response as soon as we see it. Minnesota at Denver next week. These are two teams that feel like they're slightly hyped at the moment, on the up. Josh Dobbs doing phenomenal things. Russell Wilson back playing some of his best football in the last 3 or 4 years. Are you attacking this game? And if so, how are you attacking it?
Yeah, so in terms of Sunday night games, I feel like this is definitely better than some we've seen in recent weeks. You know, we've had some pretty horrific ones. And Josh Dobbs absolutely makes things fun. He's averaging the third most quarterback rushing yards per game at 36.8. I think TJ Hockenson has been fantastic. He has 68.1 yards per game, is a complete volume hog. The Broncos allow the second most tight end fantasy points. So I think, you know, on the passing side, that's kind of exactly what you expect. You know, whether Jordan Addison can get back into the top 24 wide receivers after two straight games outside the top 28 remains to be seen. The Broncos, their defense, it's kind of been a tale of two halves. They were awful against, you know, they were awful on defense over the first 5 weeks. They ranked ninth best over the past 5 weeks. So what do we see? You know, Denver ranked 27th against wide receiver ones in DVOA, meaning that Jordan Addison, in theory, should have an okay matchup. But then the big question is, what do we see happening at running back with Alexander Mattison? Is he dealing with concussion, I believe? Ty Chandler went 15, 45, and one touchdown in week 10. And I think that, you know, you can get at this Broncos team. They've allowed the most fantasy points to running back. That's partly inflated by the 70-point game to Miami. But they've really struggled at times full stop against running backs. So, yeah, that feels completely straightforward. Courtland Sutton, his 7 touchdowns, like no other player on the team's got more than 3. I think he is clearly the red zone option. Jerry Jeudy only has 2 touchdowns on the season. So if you're looking at showdown, I would expect most people to err towards either Courtland Sutton or towards TJ Hockenson as their captain choice. Javonte Williams, 24 touches per game over the last 3. It feels like they're really turning this offense over to him. Yes, P. Ryan and yes, Jaleel McLaughlin are going to mix in at times, but the Broncos have 1 rushing touchdown and that was scored in week 2. They haven't been able to produce consistently on the ground in terms of picking up points, in terms of keeping drives going. So I would still expect it to be Courtland Sutton who leads the team in points in terms of red zone points of a bare minimum this week.
Yeah, and we saw Marvin Mims start to get more usage, start to play more snaps last week. He scored minus points 3 of the last 5 weeks. Totally over the last 5 weeks, he scored minus 1 fantasy points. Gary's asking, over under 0 fantasy points. What do you think, Tom?
It's just really tricky, isn't it? I mean, Sean Payton said that he had a note in his notebook to get Marvin Mims more involved. And he's still never played 40% of the snaps. He's still never had more than 1 target in a game since, what, week 4? I really can't believe that it's going to happen for him. The play with Marvin Mims was always that one of Jeudy or Sutton got moved. And then when Greg Dulcich went down and you looked at what they had at tight end, it was like, okay, well, maybe we find a way to force more 3 wide receiver sets. But it just isn't Marvin Mims, like, for one reason or another. And I think, you know, he's been droppable in redraft for weeks now. And if you're in a situation where you need to start Marvin Mims, I mean, next time I see you, I'll give you a hug because it sounds pretty bleak.
Absolutely. However, a matchup that we're hoping to start plenty of guys for, the glamour tie, the Eagles at the Chiefs. Is this start everyone in this matchup, Tom?
Yeah, definitely. I think you look at this and one of the stories for this season for me has been that the Chiefs have really got it done on defense. They've been excellent. They rank 3rd in DVOA and coming into the season, I didn't expect that. I thought that they were perhaps lacking a little bit of star power in the secondary and at safety, but they rank 4th best against wide receiver 1s, 8th against wide receiver 2s, 4th against wide receiver 3s, 8th versus tight ends, and then 5th versus running backs in the pass game. So they really haven't got a particular weakness there, which is completely different to the Eagles. When you look at them, they allow a league high to wide receiver fantasy points. They allow the 4th most wide receiver outside points. Where you can possibly get at the Chiefs is through the slot. They allow the 3rd most slot points because we tend to be playing that kind of defense that gives up a little bit over the middle without giving up big plays. But I'm not sure really, is that going to be AJ Brown or is he going to be pushing out to the outside where he seems to do plenty of his damage? And we know he's such a movable piece. Without Dallas Goedert, I'm not expecting anything from the tight end position for the Eagles. I know people may want to make Albert O happen, but it's not going to happen. So, yeah, I think you start your studs. Rashi Rice is only two games inside the top 24 wide receivers. It would have been nice to see a little bit more from him, but I think you can start him if you need to. Pacheco, I'm betting on positive touchdown regression to come at some point. He's only had three touchdowns total. He's on screen. 21 of the running backs have had more. And this Eagles team, they've allowed the fewest running back fantasy points. So perhaps it won't come this week, but I'd still be okay starting Pacheco if you had to.
Yeah, I agree with Pacheco. I love the Rice play this week. I think, you know, post-buy rookie bump, we saw he had a season high in snap share in the Germany game at 68%. He scored over 9 fantasy points the last five weeks on the trot. It feels like the Chiefs are starting to include him, starting to get him the ball even more. And I think that for the Chiefs to potentially get back to Super Bowl and win a Super Bowl, someone in this wide receiver core outside of Travis Kelce needs to hold their hand up and say, I can get open when we need a play. And I think that Rashi Rice is potentially that. And I think the Chiefs are going to start to feed him the ball, and hopefully he could be a league winner down the stretch here.
But one thing that seems worth mentioning, though, that might change how you're viewing this matchup. Have you heard a report that Travis Kelce's parents are set to meet Taylor Swift's parents for the first time at this game?
I've muted Taylor Swift on Twitter or X and tried to avoid any mention of it. So, yeah, I did see the Kelce's released a Christmas song, though. So that's, you know.
Oh, really? Okay. Well, the Eagles do allow 12th most fantasy points to tight end. So it does feel like a game where Kelce can get back to being at least in the top 12 after back-to-back games outside it. But no, yeah, this one, we're just hoping for a fun game, and in showdown, I think there are plenty of ways you can attack it. As ever, I would lean towards either Kelce at captain spot or AJ Brown with Devonta Smith.
Yeah, I'm just looking forward to watching this game, quite frankly. Less about fantasy. Let's just have a really good game of football. Absolutely. If you are here, you've not hit the thumbs up button, you've not hit the subscribe button, you've made it an hour into the show and not done those two things, go and do it right now. Remember, Tom and I'll answer 100% of your questions. Stay tuned. We've got more content coming this week. We've got DFS stuff. We've got Fantasy Game Day app preview. We've got so much more. But most importantly, best of luck this week and go win those matchups.